Divorce equals stress, uncertainty, and an overwhelming feeling of anxiety. A divorce involving a child with special needs can really escalate those emotions. Divorce rates for families with children with autism are considered to be special needs, and they are as high as 80%. For families of children with all disabilities, that number climbs even higher to 85 to 87%. What do you need to know and protect yourself if your child falls into this? Well, joining us from New York is attorney Sandra Radna, who has handled many of these cases before. And Sandra is going to teach you everything you need to know about these situations. Sandra, thank you, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Alyssa. Thanks for having me back.
Love having you back. So, you know, because children with special needs require a lot more care, how are things such as custody and visitation agreements put together, and does it need to include a special contingency plan because of the circumstances?
Well, this is such an important issue, and I'm so glad we're speaking about it today, because your run-of-the-mill typical stipulation of settlement or divorce agreement would usually say that the parent who's paying child support would pay child support till the child either turns 18 and works full-time or completes college and then works after that. So usually it goes to the age of 21, maybe 22 at the outside if they complete college when they're 22, and that's the end of it. When you have a child with special needs, and you spoke about two different types of children with special needs, two different categories. One is the child who's on the autism spectrum, and there's also other special needs children, maybe because of medical issues or something else. And those children may never be independent, depending on the degree of their disability. And if that happens, you have to think about what's going to happen after they turn 21, after they turn 18, after the parents are no longer there, who's going to take care of the children? And your agreement, your divorce agreement, has to be specific about that. It has to be, for example, if a parent doesn't want the child to be in a group home, well, how are you going to fund their care if they're going to be taken care of in-home by somebody else? Does there need to be some type of government planning, like a Medicare or a Medicaid program, which is what we call it in New York? It's called different things in other states throughout the country. I think in California it might be called CaliMed, if I remember correctly. But you have to see if it's going to have that. If you're going to have a government program, then you also have to have a trust and estate's attorney to help, because maybe they can do something called a supplemental needs trust, which is what we call it in New York. I'm not sure about the rest of the country, that would protect those government benefits, and then that would pay for the custodial care or whatever other care they need in the future. The divorce agreement would refer to that trust or that supplemental needs trust or whatever other agreement was put in place for the child. And if it doesn't, then you're just leaving it really up to chance about what happened. So you never want to do that.
You know, I'm so glad you touched upon it, because the last time you joined us, you talked about that the language in a divorce agreement has to be very specific. So what are some examples of some words that should be in a divorce agreement when there is a child involved with special needs?
So there's a few things. Instead of saying college, for example, we might say vocational school is what they're going to go to. It could talk about if the child becomes independent, here's what we're going to do. If the child remains dependent for whatever reasons due to their condition, here's what we're going to do. We're going to agree that the child will go into custodial care, but not in a group home, in a facility. You could even name the facility if you had that type of planning in effect. You could name who the guardian's going to be in the event that the parents can't take care of them. Now, that would also be in a trust agreement, but the divorce agreement should refer to it. So there should be the divorce agreement isn't what makes the succession plan for the child. What the divorce agreement does, it refers to the succession plan for the child, which is usually done by a trust and estate's attorney, or I should say a trust attorney, because it's going to have not only where the child is going to live in the future, because a trustee or a guardian that's appointed is going to be handling all that and making sure it happens, but it's also going to talk about how that's going to be paid for. So that's not something that's going to be in the divorce agreement. However, what would be in the divorce agreement is things like the parents will continue to pay for medical care for the child until they get some other program to fund that. So say, for example, the parents are working, the child's medical insurance is through the job, health insurance, that's the typical way that we have it, right? And when that child turns 18, if they're still dependent, the parent still has to become a legal guardian for them. Otherwise, they can't make decisions. Even if they're mentally not able to make decisions on their own, they would still have to be appointed the guardian. Once they're appointed the guardian, then you could talk at that point what kind of medical insurance they're going to get. So that can be in the agreement. What's going to pay for it can be in the agreement. What medical insurance is going to pay for it? Will they apply for a government program such as Medicaid or Medicare? The trust, you know, it's preferable that the trust be created prior to the time that the divorce agreement is finalized, so the divorce agreement can refer to it. So basically what you want to have in any divorce, and today we're talking about special needs children, you want to be working almost with a team. Who's the rest of your team? The team's going to be the other people that are preparing the ancillary agreements that your divorce agreement is going to refer to give predictability to what's going to happen. Because how do we feel best? If we plan and we know what's going to happen, in the event that we're not here, at least we feel that our children are going to be taken care of. It's the uncertainty that's very scary. What will happen if I'm not here? Who's going to take care of this child the way I take care of it? So that's a very long answer to your short question, but I'm hoping I'm giving you the information you're looking for.
No, you always do. You know, you talk about the team. When you're going through a divorce, when parents who are going through a divorce and have a child with special needs are putting together, you know, their teams, should they also retain a disability attorney?
Well, a disability attorney, that's a very good question, because depending on what the needs of the child are, a disability attorney might be able to get them qualified for Medicare that might have some benefits that Medicaid doesn't have. So, and they'd also get income that goes into, it can go into a fund for the child because they're disabled. So it served twofold, because remember we talked about possible custodial care if the parent's not around. How is that going to be funded? Medicare may be able to help with that. Or the disability might say Medicaid would be better. So a disability attorney is very good to have just to give advice. And the earlier on that the parent goes to find out what their options are, the better able they are to plan. So, yes, a disability attorney should be part of the team.
You know, you also, I want to go back to that agreement, and a lot of people think of the right now, but you always say with your clients, you've got to think a lot further, and you have to think about the lifetime. Why is that so important, especially when you're working with a client who has a child with special needs?
When you're working with a client with special needs, there's a few things. Let's talk about the right now with the special needs child. You have two parents. Typically, the reason that the divorce happens is one parent ends up being the primary caretaker for the special needs child because they're a lot of work. So no matter how much you love the child, at some point you need some type of respite. You need to be able to have some time that somebody else is taking over, because it's very difficult to take. It's very taxing emotionally taking care of a special needs child, whether they're medically fragile or they're on the autism spectrum or they have some other type of disability that's difficult. So the right now is if the other parent is going to be taking care of the child, they have to really take their time, because sometimes the other parent just says, you know what, I took the child and they started having a temper tantrum and I couldn't calm down, so they go around the block and bring them right back. So the parent that thought they were going to be having a little bit of time off doesn't have that. So you want to make sure that the parent is taking care of the child. If they can't take care of them, that they have somebody qualified, somebody who knows how to take care of that child caring for them, and that could be in your agreement. So say you have a medically fragile child. They can't just have a regular babysitter. They can't have the teenage babysitter in the neighborhood, right? They need somebody who knows how to take care of whatever the medical conditions that child has, so they can take care of it. So that would have to be specifically in the agreement. Something like the parent, the other, both parents have to approve whoever's taking care of the child. The next thing is, once the child does get older, you want to be specific about where the child is going to go. And I know I've said that already, but it's really important because there's so many different choices. I had a client that moved to Arizona, and the reason they moved to Arizona is because they had programs. First of all, you qualified for Medicaid almost immediately, unlike New York or New Jersey. I think there was a very short waiting period. And there were so many programs that help children on the autism spectrum in Arizona that were covered by Medicare and Medicaid. That did not exist in New York. And they worked with children, adult children really, but adult children that were still dependent, to help them become somewhat independent, that they could have a job even if they were supervised. So a group home there was a really nice thing, as opposed to what it might be someplace else where it was a very dreary, depressing thing. So you really have to do your research, and that should get written into the agreement too, that the parent is permitting the other parent to relocate to this different location that was in the best interest of the children.
No, this is so helpful. Sandra, if people have more questions and want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
They can go to my website at radnalaw.com, RADNALAW.com.
Don't forget to get in touch with Sandra. And if you haven't already, grab her book, You're Getting Divorced, Now What? You can buy it on Amazon. And we'll be right back after this break.
Sandra Radna is an aggressive advocate who cares deeply for each of her clients. Sandra Radna is an award-winning matrimonial and family law attorney, selected as a super lawyer and honored as a lawyer of distinction and one of the power women of Long Island. She's the author of You're Getting Divorced, Now What?, a how-to guide giving you the tools you need to navigate a contested divorce in court. With easy-to-follow forms, practical tips, and stories from the trenches, Sandra's book has the advice to carry you every step of the way to your new after-divorce life. A noted leader on the latest issues concerning divorce, Sandra has brought her down-to-earth practical advice to the readers and listeners of NPR, CNBC, Decrypt Magazine, Authority Magazine, Divorce Magazine, Attorney of Law Magazine, and New York's Law Journal. Visit Sandra Radna at radnalaw.com or call 631-754-6382. That's 631-754-6382.